ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to me right now, we are moving on up. I can't believe it's episode 11. I'm really grateful for that. I started this podcast back in 2019, and I'm really excited. I'm really excited to know that hopefully sharing some really great, valuable information with you all. And I'm excited every episode to speak with my guests or whatever information I'm sharing. Just excited to share it with you. So I hope wherever you are doing well and you are enjoying your time, your day, your night. All right. We have another exciting show, and it's a really special, what I call a double dose treat, because on today's episode, we have a returning guest. And one of, so far, I'm not going to say my favorite guest, because I've had a couple of guests on this podcast and I'm not going to say favorite, but I tell you what, each time I speak with this particular guest, I'm always wowed by her story. And I'm very, very happy that she chose to come back for a second time on the Happy Black Daughter podcast to continue with her story. The first episode, she was on episode 10, and she shared her story about rising above, even in the face of challenges. And she was just, you know, she just talked about her being resilient. She told her story the best way she knew how. And we have gotten some great feedback about her story in episode 10. So if you have not, this might be a little long intro there, but bear with me. if you have not listened, okay, to episode 10, please do. I'm going to say her name in a little bit. I'm going to do all that jazz, but just know, before you listen to this episode, please go right back and listen to episode 10. It's an hour long, but pace yourself. Do it while you're washing the laundry or doing something, okay? I'm excited. She is just a fearless woman. Her story has left us, had left me wowed. As I said, she shared so many great nuggets. We could not fit all of what she shared in the first episode, because it was just going to be like 3 hours, girl, 3 hours. So, you know, and I'm glad that now this episode, we can continue on with some very impactful lessons that you've learned. And hopefully someone out there is touched and moved. Okay. But before I introduce her, I want to put a very gentle disclaimer about this episode. The discussion in this episode 11 serves to shed light on sensitive topics, and it serves to impact, all right? Number one, it doesn't serve to create any kind of negative, emotionally charged feelings. At least that's not our intention, all right? So if there's any moment of listening to this episode where you feel triggered and you may feel that it's not a safe episode for you because of the content of what we're going to speak about, by all means, I implore you to pause the podcast or stop the podcast. All right. Or go ahead and listen to the rest of the podcast. I have about, like I said, 10 more 10 episodes for you to listen to. So just keep in mind that we're here to serve you, and we aim to create a safe space and a respectful space for all listeners. All right. So having said all that, I'm not going to keep that. That was a long intro. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Miss Aretha Taylor, CEO of an amazing organization, which we talked about in the first episode. And she's going to talk probably a little bit about that too, towards the end of the podcast. But Aretha,
hello. Welcome. Hello, everyone. Hello. Thank you so much, Allison, for that great, great introduction. Thank you so much. Thank you all, listeners, yes, out there. Yeah. It's a pleasure.
How are you feeling? Welcome
I am
back.
feeling good. I'm feeling rested. I'm feeling just chilled right now. Yeah.
You know, the last podcast, oh my gosh, we've had 25 listen on the app, on Apple Play, 25 listens so far, plays, I would say it's 25 plays. And on Spotify, I believe I have 15, no, 18 plays. And then, of course, on the AllisonBram.com, the blog, there have been 90 hits, 90 people have viewed.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. So, you know, your stories get in traction, and three people have reached out to me. I forgot to share that with you, actually, but three people have reached out to me via text and said, "Wow, this episode is amazing. Continue with the great work," and they wish you all the best, and they wish you
Wow.
for you to continue with your story. So,
Oh,
you
wow. That
know,
is so
I
encouraging. Thank you so much for that.
absolutely, absolutely, and I'm grateful each time. I really, from the bottom of my heart, I'm grateful each time that you're here. I know this next topic that we're going to tap into, like I mentioned in the intros, is a bit sensitive, but we know that it's going to be authentic. It's going to be perhaps a way to heal and to be real and share it so that everyone can understand and know and learn and grow. That's the outcome. So, I know the last time we spoke in episode 10, you mentioned you know this podcast is called the Happy Black Daughter Podcast, and that's due to my baby that I birthed, which is a book a few years ago, and it talked about the really strong relationship and bond that my father and I had. He was an amazing father, and I wanted to honor him by writing that book. And I recognize while writing that book that not every daughter has the same story or experience like I did with my father. You know, each person, and I'm each person's different. You know, I mentioned earlier a family member of mine met her father when she was 36 years old for the first time. She never knew her father. And I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about what's the relationship with you and your dad? What was your relationship? Or whatever you want to talk about, whatever you want to mention. Then we're going to go into something that you experienced that's a bit triggering and we want to learn from.
Well, I did not have a relationship with my father, not because it was his fault, because my mom, she took us from Jamaica, where I am originally from, and moved to the United States. And so because of that, we were not raised with him. But because of my elder brothers and sisters, and they were able to share with me great stories about my dad, I have maybe two memories of him. But they always spoke great things about him. They would say he was involved, that he loved them, and that he was there. And for us, it was, we didn't really think about it as children, right? Because my mom is taking us from Jamaica to move us to the United States of America to make a better life for us. Not knowing the impact that it would have on us, not being raised with our father. And at that time, back in those days, the mother had more saying over the dad in regards to the children. So he didn't have a lot to say in that decision because they weren't together any longer, right? And my father also had a mental illness. So he wasn't in his right mind at that time, but he knew us. He was aware of his children. He would come and visit with us. I remember that one memory, he brought some money for me. And he was warning me not to let my brothers touch the money or hide it from them, right? Or they're going to take
it. Right.
But my older siblings spoke highly of him. And that gives me great comfort because I know that my father loved us. He wanted to be in our lives and he cared for us. So that makes me feel great about my dad and knowing that I had a father that loved us and he didn't abandon us.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So he was there. He had a mental illness. Did that prevent him from showing up as the way maybe
yeah
a father you think could
yeah I think that up? Played a that played a big part in it. He was schizophrenic. That had a huge part to do with it. One of my brothers, I was asking him several months ago, you know, and how it impacted him and what he remembered. And he said the same thing. He didn't have much memory of my father and he's 3 years older than I am.
Right.
But he did point out a few things in the way that it impacted him in not having a dad in his life. And I used to always wonder, you know, what it would be like to be raised with my father, with the love that he had and the support that he had, what it would be like. And I think maybe in 2013, I sat down and had a conversation with God.
Yeah.
And I asked, why did you allow this? And he answered me in a way where I certainly wasn't expecting that answer. And it was like I had closure. What he said to me was, you would have loved him more than you loved me.
Wow. Wow. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I'm sure despite of his illness, deep down, I'm sure in the core of who your father was growing up, he was just a really great guy, and what I've growing up, I've always wanted to, I always ask questions to my dad and ask him about his background, how he grew up. And he was always open to share that information with me. And, was it the case where the schizophrenia, was it where it would act up all the time? Was it something that flares up? It was just like a constant, it was something, do you remember it being where you couldn't have like a conversation?
No, I don't remember.
At all? Okay.
Because again, I was very small, but according to the older ones, it was more constant, even though he was aware of who we were. And that he had children. And it got worse in 1979 because we went to the States in 75, at least myself. I did with my other brother. And we went to the States in 75. And in 79, we came down on vacation. And he heard that we were there, so he came around and visited with us. And then my mom took off again. We left again, right? We were there for like 3 weeks, and then we left. So he comes back to the house looking for us, looking for his children, and was told, no, they left. They went back to the States. That crushed him. And we were totally got worse. Where now he had to be placed in a nursing home, right? And there he lived for the rest of his life until he passed. But it took a toll on him. And I believe the first time we left, when we migrated, it took a toll on him then. Because again, it wasn't like my mom sat down and had a conversation with him and said, this is my plan. This is what I'm going to do with the children. You know, it wasn't like that. She just took her children and left.
And left. Yeah. So that was something that was very hurtful for him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, he took a hard hit on that.
Right.
He passed away. Were you there? Were you present at the funeral or?
No.
Okay.
I didn't come down for the funeral.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with that experience, at least, you know, like I said, we all have different stories, different father-daughter relationship stories. And in this case, you know, this was something obviously was out of your control, you know. But the beauty about it was that you knew your father. You knew at least you knew him, you know. You
I
could
knew that
pinpoint
about
and
him.
said, you could pinpoint and say, that's my father. You know, regardless of his illness, you know, that's your dad. And if it wasn't for him, you would not be here, you know. So I am hopeful maybe that's something that you're grateful for, hoping that in the years going by that it got easier and better for you to know that even though he wasn't the kind of father that you had, that you wanted to have, at least, you know, you have some kind of peace of mind to know that you've met him, you've seen him, and you know him, you know.
And what also brings me comfort is when I go back to the area where we live was which was in St. Thomas, Jamaica.
Yeah.
And the people from back in the day who knew him, they would, reminisce and give us jokes about him
Right.
and talk about him and the way he was, and I would just be laughing or just listening,
That's special.
and yeah, that's
Yeah.
very special. That's very special to me.
Oh, bless him. Well, may his soul rest in peace. And Daddy, wherever you are, let me tell you, thank you for Aretha Taylor. You know, he thank you. Definitely is a blessing because here you're here. You're here. Now to transition now with that, you know, did you find any kind of father figure? Yes, you had your dad and you knew him, but was there any other father figure that you could look back and say that you've admired and you respected? What was your relationship like with a father figure or a male figure once you immigrated here to the United States? And what was that like?
Well, my mom had a common law husband, and he was the only male figure that I had known. Father figure, right? And even though I respected him, I didn't look at him as my dad. I never loved him as my father. And one of the reasons was because of the molestation. He was molesting me. And that went for a few years, right? And I was disappointed, confused, worried, more so concerned and worried. If I told my mom, what would this be like? How would she react? And more so, how would she react toward me? Would she blame me?
I was going to ask you that eventually. Was it something that, you know, first of all, you know, you went right into it, you know, and I want to just kind of backtrack a little bit because before the molestation happened, were there any signs of him groping you or signs of him looking at you a certain way, doing certain things, saying certain things to you? Do you remember? Grooming you, not groping, excuse me, grooming you. Yeah.
So it started when I was maybe about 12, 11, 12, right? Where he didn't say anything. But it was the touches. Like he would casually he would put his arm around my waist, like if he's talking to me, and then slowly drop it to my behind. And so, like, he would do it the first time, you're thinking, okay, maybe that was a mistake. And the second time again, you're like, okay, what's going on? And then the third and fourth and fifth time, you're like, all right, this is not a mistake. He's doing this on purpose. And then he will have me sit on his lap, right? So he's sitting me on his lap, and I'll get up. I'm not comfortable doing that. But here's the deal. At that age, my mom, she worked two jobs and she would work at nights. And so when I came home from school, my responsibility in the household was to cook and clean and do laundry for her two sons, my two brothers, which were older than I am, and her man. So I would cook for him, set the table for him every night. When he gets home from work, I'd get up or stop doing what I'm doing. heat up his food and present it to him, like lay everything out on the table like every night.
You were like I was his
woman. Exactly.
Right.
So I did that for a long time. And then when he started with the touches and the this and the that, I'm like, okay, no. So now he started coming in my room. And he would do it when my brothers weren't there. My brothers were outside playing or whatever. You know how guys are. And they were like in their early teens. So they would disappear for a while. And or when he and I were home alone, I used to fret when we were home alone. And he would come in my room and do the business. And there were times when I was like, all right, I'm going to put my dresser behind the door. And that's what would save me. But all along, I would say, how am I going to tell this to mom? And deep down, I knew, I felt she would not either not believe me or blame me. Either the two, because that's the kind of woman she was. And eventually, I did. I told two of my sisters. All of my siblings are older than I am. I'm the last of eight. So I told two of my sisters. I went over to their house and I sat them down and told them, look, this is what's happening to me.
Right.
This is what he's doing. So, of course, they're like, oh, no. We got to tell mom. So they call up mom at work and they tell her. And now they're saying he can't even come in the house. Do not even let him come in the house tonight. You need to put him out tonight.
Exactly.
And so they made sure I got back home safe. My brothers were there. We didn't tell them immediately, especially the one brother that is closest to me, because he has a very bad temper. And my mom came home that night. She never said a word to me. She never came and said, I'm sorry. She opened the door. She looked at me. She closed back the door. She never said anything. And she did put him out. 3 weeks later, Christmas, I remember being in the bathroom taking a shower, and I heard this knock on my door, just a knock on the bathroom door. And I said, come in. It was my mom. She comes in and she makes a speech. And the speech was, I have to take back Ozzy because I need the money.
Wait, what? Hold on.
That was the speech. That was it.
Hold on, back up. Your mom came into
the bathroom
mm-hmm. gave you a speech and said, you, Aretha, have to take back?
No,
oh,
not
she
me.
Has to,
I have to take back Ozzy, which was his name.
Right.
Because I need the money, the help.
Wow.
So Aretha I didn't have a voice. I didn't have any opinions. It was never discussed with me. It was never asked, how do you feel? She never even checked up on me for the 3 weeks that he was gone to ask me, how are you doing? How are you holding up? I'm sorry. Give me a hug or anything like that.
We
didn't come from that era, you see.
Wow.
Everything was suppressed.
Hush, hush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just sweep it on the rug. It never happened type of thing. And I remember her telling me that when I was in the bathroom, I started crying. Because I knew, all right, it's going to start all over again.
Yeah, yeah. That's shocking. You know, that's very hurtful. And it really, it says so much. The fact that your mom needed financial support. Mm-hmm. And the only way, her thinking is that the only way was to bring him back in the house so he could help with the bills.
My mentality was, you put a man before your child. You put, what about my safety?
Mm-hmm.
What about my feelings? What about I'm your daughter. I'm your flesh and blood. You are supposed to protect me. Instead, you're putting me back in danger.
She didn't put your feelings first,
you don't love me.
Obviously. Yeah.
Right. This is my thinking at that age. You don't love me. You don't care for me. You know, you really don't love me. How can you do this to me? You betrayed me. I can't trust you.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you communicate that with her? Like,
no,
were you upset? And did
you just don't do that.
Say, you know, no, why? You know, no. Did you not say something to her and said, I don't think this is a good idea?
No. You just don't do that. You can't do that with that kind of mother.
Wow.
You can't. You have to suppress your feelings, hold your feelings in. Your feelings does not matter. As a matter of fact, you don't even have any feelings.
Wow.
Right.
That hurts.
Right. 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 So it went on for a little bit. It went on and it stopped because I told my brother. The one that I was closest with at the time.
Good.
I told him, and my brother approached him, and they had an altercation, and my brother threatened him and said, if you touch my sister ever again, I will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And he meant it. And my stepfather never placed his hand on me again.
That's right. Wow. Mm. Good. Good for your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Someone had to stand up to him, obviously.
Right.
Mom was too a weak of a person, unfortunately, sadly to say, at the time, because she was thinking of her own self-interest and paying the bills. I'm sorry that you experienced that, Aretha, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, how did that affect you psychologically? I mean, was that, you know, looking back, how did it, I mean, that's trauma, you know, psychologically, how did that
depression.
You.
I went into depression, and I covered it, not knowing that I had been depressed, not knowing that I was carrying that hurt, anger, and resentment. I was carrying it up until like I was 45, 46 years old, because it came exploding on my mom. I exploded like a volcano. I erupted at that age. Because I hadn't forgiven her and it was still hurting and I didn't realize it. And even within that period of time, I still loved my mom, still respected my mom, still had a relationship with her, but, we had never talked about it. We had never spoken about that all the years until I erupted on her. When I was 46 years old. And even when it came up and I just started shouting and yelling and screaming at her and saying, you are my mother. You are supposed to protect me. You did not protect me. And I just started crying and trembling. And instead of my mom holding me and saying, I'm sorry, I didn't know any better. I'm sorry. Forgive me. She cussed me out clean. Called me a bitch, called me a liar, and put me at her house.
Sounds as if she was more angry at you than
that's my mom.
Yeah.
That was that was who she was.
Hold on, let me ask you this. The husband.
She was never married.
Okay.
They were in common law.
Common law. Well, yeah, it's a common law husband.
Okay.
Did he, so after your brother, you know, they had the altercation and he never, did what he was doing to you that it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever like in years passing or what, did he ever come to you? Did he say anything to you? How did he communicate with you after that? Like, what was the relationship like with that? Was it awkward to see him?
It was kind of awkward. It was very awkward, actually. And,
You
know, the good thing about it was shortly after he moved out.
Oh.
Yeah, shortly after he moved out, my mom asked him to leave because she had given her life, rededicated her life to God. And she was like, we can't live like this. I can't live like this with you anymore. So you have to leave. And he moved out.
Oh, good. Good. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that.
But
okay.
We didn't really have communication, he and I. We never talked. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then, so you fast forward now, you were, the psychological effects from that was depression and you were angry. Mm-hmm. You were lashing out. You know, you were trauma.
And I had unforgiveness. Yeah.
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 And do you see yourself did you see yourself lashing out, or how was your behavior, not just towards your mom, but to other men in
to
your
men?
Life? Yes.
In regards to that, no. I did okay. not take it out on any of the men I've dated in the past. Through that, no.
Mm-mm. Okay.
As a matter of fact, I even shared that with some of the men I dated, you know, when the ones that I was really close with,
right.
I shared that story with them and they were heartbroken.
Yeah. This is something it's unfortunately in the United States, don't know the stats for any other country at this moment, but I know in the United States, 38% of Black women and experience sexual violence. And that's according to the National Center of Injury and Control. You know, they've experienced some kind of sexual violence during their lifetime. And usually when that happens, the common myth is that, you know, child sexual abuse is perpetuated by strangers or like pedophiles, but actually most people who sexually abuse children are like family members or friends, right, or someone that's close or a neighbor, or you know. And it's been, I have never experienced that. I have never known anyone, or at least have communicated that to me in the family, you know, in my family, or even friends have shared that with me. But based on the statistics and based on what I've, of course, read and growing up and listening and news, and a lot of this is common, even not just in the United States, you know, worldwide, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's like you ask the question, well, why does this happen? How does this happen? What is the prevention? How can we educate our young girls to say, when a family member does this or says this or look at you at a certain way, you have to speak up, you have to tell someone. And you are obviously, of course, you told your mom, and you know, it wasn't the response that you wanted. But a teacher, or you know, your brother, you told your brothers, tell someone.
Told my sisters first.
Yeah. So, you know, listeners, you're listening to this podcast and you've just heard what, you know, Aretha, how she described her experience and what she went through with her stepfather. Please, if you are listening, if you're a mother and you have children, all right, you have nieces, you have cousins, you have goddaughters, have that conversation with them, you know, have that hey, how are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, let's have a conversation about protecting your body. Let's have a conversation about certain men who may pry on little girls and what that may look like. Because it's, you know, 38% is a lot, you know.
And
that's something I think if you're listening to this podcast, please take away from this. Speak to your niece, speak to your daughter, speak to your grandchildren, have that conversation, you know, let them know, you know, if they're at school, you know, tell the teacher if something happened, even if it's an adult, you know, don't allow the adult to touch you a certain way, look at you in a certain way, you know. Oh, is that Aretha?
And Allison, also, even in adults, there are a lot of adults who are walking around feeling shame because they've been molested. I know of someone right now, she was raped. And she was raped by a stranger. And it has affected her tremendously. And she refuses to tell her children because of the shame. And this woman, she's in her 60s, her early 60s. So even as adults, you were violated. You were raped, sexually molested. It is not your fault.
Right.
It is not for you to carry that guilt or shame because you did nothing wrong.
Exactly.
And we need to talk about this. If you need to tell your husband, tell your daughter, tell your son, tell a friend, tell your pastor, say something to someone.
Yeah.
Because this is something you've been carrying around for years and years and years. And that is what helped me. What helped me was talking about it to friends.
Yeah.
Especially friends. I talked about it with my friends and I talked about it for years. But the person that I should have talked about it with was my mom. Should have been my mom. I did not, because I was still afraid of speaking to her about it, even as an adult, because yes. I knew she would react that way. And right. she did. She blamed me, still blamed me at that age. And wow. I left feeling that I was raped all over again.
Oh my goodness. Right.
And I mean, felt that betrayal all yeah. over again. So that little girl, that teenage, that young 12, 13, 14 year old girl started crying again. All those feelings started coming up again. And I had to now deal with those emotions. And I dealt with them alone. I cried straight every day for 1 week straight, nonstop. I just cried, that little girl, because at that age, then I didn't cry. I did not right. show any emotions. I just kept it in because right. I wasn't allowed to show any emotions. Right. No one came. My sister, just one of my sisters, was upset at my mom that she moved him back in. And she voiced her opinion and her concern. But my mom, she didn't want to hear that because it was about her. But I could never, and I never had the chance to speak because my voice was taken away from me.
Let me ask you something. You know, you mentioned something earlier that it came across as if your mom was blaming you, that you mm-hmm. were at fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that sentiment is not new either. A mm-hmm. lot of stories that I've read, I've mm-hmm. seen, where the daughter tells the mom, it's always, well, what were you wearing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what were you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
why is it? Why? I you can't get into the heads of every woman, right? And we're right. all different culturally and religiously. We have right. our different culture. But for the most part, though, what do you think? What would make a mother respond like that?
No idea. With my mom, because she was bipolar, she had mental illness. So that's what I give it to now.
Okay.
Because she was not in her right frame of mind.
You have mothers who are in their right frame of mind.
I know.
And they're like, well, what were you wearing? What were, you know, what perfume were you putting?
I don't know, I think
I'm like, well, what is it? Is it this? Is there a competition? Do mm-hmm. mothers and daughters have competition between themselves? Why a mom would look at her daughter and say, it's you. I mean, that's not love.
No,
that is not love, you know? And you said, okay, in your case, your mom was bipolar. So you attributed that
right.
to be the reason.
Right.
Did
now
she
I
know,
do.
Does she? Okay.
Back then.
Okay.
My mama didn't know something was wrong with her. We knew something was wrong with mom because we were like, this woman, her behavior is just off the chain. It's not normal. Like, you're walking down the street behind her. I remember Flatbush Avenue, Brooklyn, and Flatbush Avenue. We're walking down Flatbush Avenue. We're going to the supermarket. Everybody's just walking about, minding their business. And she will just go off on someone walking behind her, accusing them of trying to pickpocket her or take her purse. And she would just cause such a scene.
Oh,
and I'm
wow.
there with her. And I'm like, this is so embarrassing. She had a temperament. She was very emotional. She was very abusive. She wasn't normal, right? But that was our norm. That was
right.
our normal, right?
Right?
But we knew something was off. But it wasn't until 2017 when she had dementia. It was one of my nieces who was at the house caring for her. She called me up and she says, Auntie, Grandma has bipolar. And I said, no, she doesn't. And she goes, yes, she does. And I said, no, she does not. Right then, I start getting defensive. And then she says, Auntie, I'm looking at the medication right now. And it's treating her for dementia and bipolar. Grandma has bipolar.
Yeah.
So I said to her, I don't believe it. They're only treating her for dementia. She goes, okay. She let me alone because she heard it in my voice that I did not want to receive that.
Mm.
So a short while after, I go home. Because when she initially told me this, I was in New York on business. I went back to Florida and I'm at my mom's house. And I felt this urge to pick up the bottle and look at it. And I did. And I started to Google the medication. And it said that it's also for bipolar. Wow. Immediately, I just started crying. Mm. I fell down bawling because
everything
came to
you. Yeah.
This disease took my mom. This, we never knew who my mother was, the real person that she should have been to us. Mm. And it devastated me. And I called my niece and I started crying and she was crying with me.
Oh. Take a moment. Oh no. Yeah. Yeah.
That life was misery. We were tormented. We were unhappy. We had suicidal thoughts. We were divided as a family. We Wow. were not a family. It did so much to us as a family.
Yeah.
It ruined us as a family. It ruined relationships because she did these things to us. She put us against each other. Sometimes we were angry with each other and didn't even know why. We were arguing and didn't even understand why. Because this disease was so messed up. I can't even find a word for it. The word was torment. It
yeah.
tormented and tortured us psychologically, verbally, emotionally.
And she was unaware. And it's she had all of that for all those years. And
mm-hmm.
little did she, you know, if she had been diagnosed earlier on
mm-hmm.
and perhaps being medicated for it,
mm-hmm.
the living condition would have been the living environment would have been totally different.
Yeah.
What was, I don't know if you know or your niece, but let me ask you, what made her get diagnosed? What was, she went to the doctor, right? What was the cause of her?
So my mom was already, she was already an elderly. My mom died when she was 92 years old. So we found out
yes,
when she was 91. Right. So, you know, you take your mom to the doctors or whatever else. But my niece paid attention to this particular medication. I don't know what made her look at that. Oh, the dementia started getting worse. Right. Because we noticed her behavior and whatever have you. So we took her to the doctor and the doctor was like, yeah, she has dementia. And so my niece looked at the bottle and saw dementia / bipolar.
Well, I guess my question is, when did mm-hmm. she find out? When was she diagnosed? Was it before she hit? Was it in her 90s she was diagnosed?
It was in her 90s.
That's late in the game. Really?
Very late in a year before she died. It wasn't even a full year. I'm sorry. It wasn't even a full year when we found out. And I started telling my siblings and two of them were in denial and still in denial. And I was like, guys, it makes sense. Like when you Google it and you look at the behavior, it makes sense over the years why mom behaved the way she did, right? But even if we knew what it was back in the days, we wouldn't be able to help her because she was stubborn. She would be like, there's nothing wrong with me. There's something wrong with y'all. She's very stubborn.
Wow.
She was very stubborn. So she was very difficult to deal with. So at the end, now the bipolar and the dementia, oh my God. Oh my
combination,
God.
My
God. Yeah. It was heightened. So a lot of her family members didn't want to be around her, like her grandchildren and even her children, my siblings, didn't want to be around her because it was not a good environment, you know?
Yeah.
So it was painful. It was very painful when I found that out.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, that's definitely a moment where you like, oh my gosh, like your whole life flashed in front of you, you know?
Yes. And what my mother could have been like. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What your mother could have been like if she was diagnosed mm-hmm. earlier when you were younger. It could have mm-hmm. been a whole different scenario.
And
a lot of times.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry about that. A lot of times. There are people walking the streets and living inside the house with these anger issues. Their personality flips and shifts. And you're thinking, what's wrong with this person? And it's a legitimate question. It's not like, a fake question.
Right.
Maybe there's something truly wrong. And sometimes in certain cultures, they're afraid to go to the doctor and get that checked up. They're afraid to come to the reality that, you have a mental illness, and my grandmother was diagnosed with dementia at the age of 70. Mm. Actually 70, 71, 10 years before she passed.
Mm.
And it was very mild dementia. Even when before she passed, she recognized us, but she was nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
She would call a name and would say, where is such and such? And she'll point. But there are times when she would forget, like, where her keys are and certain mm-hmm. things. But if she had been in Jamaica, I believe, and she would not have gone to the doctor. She would not have gone to get mm-hmm. checked. She would have been like, let me just get some bush tea.
Right, because that's what we do.
And let me get some bush tea, drink this for 3 days, and I'll be good, and I'll be okay. So I feel that another topic is to really, encourage our elders and our, recognize and don't be afraid to say, I see something different in you. I think you need to go get something checked, man.
Right.
Literally, you have some issues. There's something that you need to take care of because... who would have thought bipolarism is probably, I don't know how easy it is to diagnose or how hard it is, but that is definitely an illness that we ought to pay attention to,
And I'm finding out now that few of my family members, mostly nieces and nephews, are diagnosed with bipolar.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's an interesting study, though, to look into it. Mm-hmm. Why are
bipolar, really, depression? We have depression in the family, very heavy. Yeah. I know my mom was chronically depressed, and that's bipolar, really.
Yeah.
She was so depressed, very emotional. These things are caused from trauma because there are a lot of things that happened to her from she was a child. And I remember talking to her once she died in 2018. So I was maybe like 2017, the earlier part of 2017, her and I were talking. And I like to sit and ask her questions about her childhood, about her dad and such and such. And she talked about being raped by 3 men. And that she never got over that. She never dealt with it. And she just cried, and she was still very much hurting, and she went through a lot, having 8 children, raising 8 children on your own. She went through, and I'm sure there are a lot of things that she went through that she didn't tell us, mm-hmm. that she was too ashamed of, so a lot of trauma that we go through in our life brings on these mental health conditions that we have not dealt with. So it makes sense, when I started doing more reading and studying, everything just started adding up and making sense as to why she was the way she was in her behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The very first time I heard of bipolar, you remember the artist Nina Simone?
Yeah.
She was bipolar.
Really?
It was a documentary. This was years ago. At Brooklyn College, we were watching some documentary, I forgot the name of, it was about Nina Simone and like jazz artists. And she told the story of how she would go on tours and right before going on stage, where she would just be angry, and she'll flip out at the the staff backstage. She'll flip out, just like spaz out, and as soon as she got on stage, she was a different person.
Wow,
she was the Nina Simone. Once she's off the stage and she's hanging with the staff and her help and everything, she was cold, man. She was cold.
Wow.
And that's what she was. You know, she mentioned that, and she said it was not until she visited Africa, she went somewhere, and a friend of hers said, you know, I think you ought to go to the doctor. I think you have some anger issues. And and she was diagnosed, and she said, you know, once she started taking her medication, she realized, wow, she felt normal. She was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. So that was the very first time I ever heard of that term, bipolar. But what I want to ask as of right now, and are there any, we all have triggers for certain things, but for you, you know, let me ask specifically, are there any triggers you may have because of this experience that you feel you're working on right now?
I do have, I struggle with my temper. If someone, and it's not just any, if it's a stranger, I don't care. But if it's someone close to me, if I'm in a relationship or a family member who attacks me and keep coming at me, I go from 0 to 100 in seconds. I have, that's happened to me. It's happened even just 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
It wasn't something I was proud of. I'm never proud of it, but I know that it's coming from there. It's coming from being bullied by my mom, being controlled by my mom, being told when to talk, when not to talk. So certain things, certain incidences, when someone says certain things to me,
right,
it will, you know, it will trigger me, it will take me there, and I will flare up. But I have to learn how to control that. I cannot, and it is wrong to allow those things to take me to that place. Still working on that. Yeah,
and we're all working on something, you know. I truly believe we are all working on something. However, while we're working on it, I strongly believe that we do have the power to create a life that we deserve, even in the midst of the challenge, even in the midst of the unknown. It's something that is it's a challenge. And you could challenge yourself, say, you know what, I know I'm going through these things. I know I have these triggers, but I'll be damned for it to allow me to stifle my life. But what I would also like to ask, what are some of the things that you do to cope, you know, that what are some activities you find yourself maybe participating in that has helped you to cope with some of those triggers, you know? That's what's your coping mechanism, you know?
Well, one, I pray a lot. I pray a lot. I spend a lot of time by myself. I cry a lot. I dig deep. I do a lot of self-examination, self-evaluation. I go deep. And many a times we are afraid of going deep because of what we might find, what we might feel. But I'm not afraid of going deep, because that is what helps me and heals me. Because I don't want to keep carrying this stuff. I don't want to carry it into any relationships. I don't want to carry it. I don't want it. So I dig deep. I do reading. I do researches. I have conferences, women's conferences, men's conferences.
Yes.
We talk about certain topics. And in talking, I'm huge on having discussions. Huge. Talking helps.
Yes.
That is, having conversations like how we're having a conversation now, it is a form of therapy, of counseling. Absolutely. It helps. If you're engaging with someone who asks the right question or someone who listens, I'm a listener. I listen very carefully, right? So if you and I are having a conversation and you say a certain thing to me, I will ask you a question regarding to what you just said. Now, what that does is it becomes thought provoking. Now you begin now to start thinking back.
Yes.
Thinking back on things, on your life, and you begin to even answer your own questions that you were asking. Now things begin to reveal to you. And before you know it, people are crying. I've had conversations with individuals where they begin to cry. They begin to release that hurt.
The healing starts.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I am a huge fan of having conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. And that conversation, that beautifully said, mm-hmm. would lead to that healing. And mm-hmm. part of the healing also, the conversation's powerful, you know, conversation's powerful.
Absolutely.
But also the next step I feel from the conversation is the physical activity. Mm-hmm. It's the journaling. It's mm-hmm. It's the helping someone go that's perhaps going through or mm-hmm. went through a similar situation. It's mm-hmm. writing down, asking yourself the question mm-hmm. that you probably won't want anyone else to ask you, but you mm-hmm. ask yourself and mm-hmm. you answer it, right? Mm-hmm. You answer it. And what it is that you need to do in order to feel better. Mm-hmm. You know, so part of it is the conversation. And then after the conversation, then it's the work.
Right.
It's showing up to do the work because we are constantly healing and we're constantly mm-hmm. learning. Do every day, there is always something in the news. Well, you know, a study came out today that if you do this. You'll be able to fit back into your jeans tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's always something new that mm-hmm. will change the trajectory of mm-hmm. your life mm-hmm. and abandon all the pain and the hurt and the fear mm-hmm. and the insecurity that you've experienced in the past and birth this diamond that you are, you know?
Right.
So that's what I see in you. And I just thank you. I appreciate you.
And I appreciate you too.
You know, I feel that your story will continue to impact mm-hmm. lives because so far I haven't totaled the math. Was never really great at math, but I think maybe what 75 people have touched your story from this platform, right? So continue doing the work.
Yeah.
And I'm excited because I feel that we're going to continue to do more collaborations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in different aspects, you know,
right.
how we can impact others. And I find you to be a wonderful, powerful, amazing woman. The last question I have, absolutely, absolutely. Not saying it just for a podcast, girl. I'm saying it. And I would say it straight up that you are amazing. Last question on what you probably mentioned it in the beginning, but overall, what advice would you give a woman, whether it's a young girl or a woman that is experiencing dealing with an environment with a bipolar mother or she doesn't know it's a bipolar mom? What advice would you give a young girl, 18-year-old or a woman that's dealing with a mother mm-hmm. who is so, you know, who's just bipolar, who's angry, who's, you never know when she's going to spaz out. You never know what's going to be next. What can you really give? What can you share?
Demonstrate love, be patient, and ask questions. Talk with the individual. That helped me a lot in sitting down and talking with my mom. And it wasn't until, again, she was in her 90s where her and I started building, no, her 80s, where we started building a close relationship. But it's so important for us to try to understand a person's behavior. So you need to get to know the individual. And I know that it's hard, it's difficult, even having patience with this person, but that's what we need to do, and love the person.
Wow. Oh, I had to take a deep breath with that. Patience, mm-hmm. patience, and ask mm-hmm. those questions, you know. You won't know if you don't ask.
Right.
So I think that's very beautiful what you just said. And yeah, you know, I feel we can continue on forever and forever and forever. But I did say that was the last question and I lied. So I apologize. What does Aretha have coming up? Because I think you have something coming up this month, right? What is it that yes. we can expect? What is it that we can expect from you? What do we have coming up? Talk to me, girl. Talk to me.
Well, October 14th, I am having a Women Empowering Women networking. It's a luncheon. It would be via Zoom. Women who are entrepreneurs who will be sharing stories on how they started their companies, what inspired them, and how it has impacted them and their communities, and us just getting to know each other as individuals and what we do and how we can support each other.
Wow, that sounds fabulous. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I will be there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this coming Thursday and Friday, I mean, it's going to be in Jamaica, I will be speaking with young people at Araka Bessa High School.
Oh, my
in
gosh.
Jamaica.
Yes.
I'm looking so forward to this.
That's you know, if listeners, Aretha Taylor is living in Jamaica, by the way. All right. She's bicoastal. You know, mm-hmm. From Kingston to Brooklyn, from Brooklyn to Miami, I don't know, Fort Lauderdale. You know, she's a tricol. I guess that's tricol.
Yes, honey, I travel.
You know what I'm saying?
I travel to get the work done. Yes,
that's right. So she is currently, perhaps, you know, cocking up her legs and having a nice jelly coconut water, which I'm so jealous right now. But yes, by the way of Jamaica, which sounds wonderful. Well, that's exciting. I'm excited to be a part of that October 14th via Zoom.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a pleasure having you. Is there a contact info? What's your email, website, or anything like that? The listeners want to get in touch with you.
My email is N as in new, B as in beginnings. No, I'm sorry. I'm giving you something different. It's nboutreachpro@gmail.com. nboutreachpro@gmail.com. And my website is www.nboutreachpro.com. N as in Nancy, B as in boy, outreachpro.org.
Sounds like a plan to me. I'm excited. Thank you so much, Aretha Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great. I loved it. Such a pleasure. Such an honor. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Thank you. And thank you to the listeners. Again, we appreciate you taking the time out to listen to this fabulous, fabulous conversation with Aretha and I. The Happy Black Daughter podcast is here to serve. It's here to give the right information. It's here to uplift. And I'm glad that you took the time out wherever you are to listen. All right. You know, when we speak to Aretha, it's going to be not just 30 minutes, 20 minutes. It's going to be over an hour. So I implore you that all the goodness that you hear from this to take it in, and I hope what you got from this particular episode will help you on your journey. Ladies and gentlemen, if you or you know someone who is going through abuse, speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Speak up. Respect your body. Respect your
yes.
body. Your body is your temple. Respect mm-hmm. it. No one is allowed to abuse your body. So having said that, thank you. Have a wonderful
thank
day.
Thank you.
And you have yourself a great, 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 great day, a great week. Thank you for listening to The Happy Black Daughter. My name is Allison Bram. Until next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.